wake up Denver.
Bob and Bo.
On the course again. I can't wait to get on
is
the
Is that you
again.
Singing, Bo?
It's me imitating Willie Nelson.
With my friends. And I can't wait to get on the course again.
Golf's greatest hits.
Seeing courses that I've never seen. Making shots that I may never make again. I can't wait to get on the
course. That is great.
All right, folks.
That is great.
We're giving you a little taste of golf's greatest hits coming out this fall at record stores near you.
That's right. And Jason Hickman did a great job. Jason, you know, plays guitar in our worship band at Highline on Sunday mornings, and he's an amazing musician. So
great guy, too. Yeah. Put enough stuff behind my voice that I occasionally, it sounds like I'm actually hitting a note.
Yeah, you hit a couple there.
Thank
I noticed,
you.
Yeah.
And what time's church today?
Yeah, church is 10:30. And I was just thinking, as a matter of fact, before the show that, you know, listeners, if you're out there and you don't have a place to get plugged in, we'd love to have you come and check out Highline. If you can make it to Orchard and I-25, you see that huge Schepler sign, and we are one block south. So 10:30, come join us, and you'll get to hear Jason on guitar. Biff Gore from The Voice leads worship.
And Bob Belts, my partner, preaching, one of the best preachers in America and the single brightest mind in the history of biblical scholarship.
Yeah, yeah, right. But, you know, we're going through Psalms. And,
you are?
And, you know, they're amazing. They're just amazing. So you get the ups and the downs and the highs and lows of life and how God can handle all of it. So
if you're driving in, literally, to the front door of Schepler's, just veer towards the right and the south and to go about a block, and there's the church on the left.
You yeah, the street it. Just curves around.
And you'll feel comfortable, excited, welcome. There's donuts, there's smiles, there's great music and great preaching. So if you're looking for a church today, I would say go there, Highline Community Church.
I'll be there.
Bob has to go because he's 60 years old and he is the senior pastor. Our goal on You Get the Blessing is to introduce you to guests each week that hopefully will inspire you because of what they're doing with their lives and will bless you because of the impact they're having for Christ in this community. And our guest today is James Fry. He's the founder of Mean Street Ministries. James, we welcome you to the program.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. So, where were you raised?
Well, I was born in Texas and spent time in the South, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, New Mexico.
Right with me. I was Oklahoma City 15 years. My hair blew out in the third grade. That's why I have to do this comb over right now, which I say is going to become popular once again soon.
Yeah.
But what year were you when you got out?
About 78, 79, I moved here from college. I was on my way to Oregon. I wanted to get away from heat.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who from college was living here, and he had Rolling Stones concert tickets.
That's a good start.
So I was living in a van. So I just kind of put off my journey and stuck around for that concert. And then 2 weeks after that, the Eagles were going to play. So I stuck around for that one.
And, gee.
That's
a good stretch. Stones and the Eagles. And you can remember sitting there seeing these groups?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a big fan.
Good memories. What about the Beatles? Let's talk some real music.
That's before my time.
Gee whiz. Come on. My kids even know the Beatles. But I do say to people at least once a month in the summertime in Denver, somebody will say, boy, it is really hot today. And I'll be like, no, this is not hot. This is air conditioning compared to Oklahoma and Texas. Agree?
But, you know, everything's relative. If we don't have any more 90-degree days this summer, I'm going to be happy.
I guess you're right. Yeah. And everything is relative in Oklahoma. In fact, every one is related somehow to another. So,
oh, heck yeah. You can't shake a stick in Oklahoma and not hit a relative of mine.
Okay. Well, tell us a little about your background then in terms of family and faith.
My mother came from a family of cotton pickers. She was one of 13. More kids you have, more cotton you could pick. They They traveled with the Fields, but they lived mainly in Southeast Oklahoma during the winter. And my dad had a bit of a rougher life. He was, got to be politically correct about this.
Dad was an alcoholic and a baseball player. So can you top that?
He was born to a woman who traveled with a circus.
Oh.
His life was a bit rough. Eventually he was given to an Indian family to work their fields for money. He made it out of it, though. He made it into the service when he had met my mom. And so we come from humble beginnings. I was born in a trailer house in Texas. And anyway.
Tough stuff as a kid.
Yeah.
So how about faith? When did that come into your life?
Well, my mom was always a theist, always wanted to go to church. My dad was a workaholic, and he was, as he got older, became more and more of a deist. And
you better explain what those words mean, Bob.
All right. So theist would be someone that believes in God, generically, big. Deist believe in God, but they believe God kind of got the whole thing going and then stepped out of the picture. So not exactly engaged in everyday life. That's how I would define those. But, you know, maybe James has a different spin on that. But. Well,
that's how I meant it.
Okay, great.
So that gave
Don't ask me any more difficult questions like that, by the way, Bo, just in case I don't know the
answer. I was going to ask you, what is a pagan and what is a heagan?
I was going to ask you, what do you think about the fact that the theory of relativity and the theories of quantum mechanics seem to be in conflict with each other?
Wow.
I have no idea what that question means.
I'm going to have to get back to you.
That's my question for
Here's my answer to that. Okay. Not being versed to the highest degree of accuracy, I hesitate to articulate in fear that I may deviate from the true course of rectitude.
That sounds like something you had to memorize to join a fraternity, I bet.
That's something I memorized, which basically says, I don't No.
You know, we are so far off course.
We've drifted off our guests.
Back to James.
James Fry, founder, Mean Street Ministries, and your own faith took root how?
Well, in fifth grade, there was this Sunday school teacher named Mr. Stubblefield, and he was teaching the young men.
What town was this?
This was in Liberal, Kansas, on the edge of a wheat field.
Because my babysitter in Oklahoma City was Mrs. Stubblefield.
Well, they were probably related.
I guarantee it. So what happened in the fifth grade?
Well, he was this old guy teaching the young boys, and no one was paying attention in class, and he was always trying to get our attention, and he'd give us these really nice little gifts, like scrimshod leather wallets that zipped closed, and Bibles with our name in it, and things like that, just to try to get us to pay attention. And he always would sneak a little request in his little gifts to you that would ask you to memorize some verses. And I started feeling bad for him because no one took this guy serious and tried in class and things like that. So just for, you know, because I felt bad for him, I started memorizing some of those verses. And I was a really ornery kid. I mean, I did some really bad stuff in church. I set off stink bombs in the sanctuary. Let goldfish go in the baptismal font.
You know, you'd be arrested for that now.
Yeah.
But, Wait a minute, goldfish in the baptismal tank. I'm going to do that this week.
But one Sunday, and I was probably squirming around, and my mom put her claw on me and, you know, clamped down and to get me to stop squirming around. And somehow something got into me. I started feeling it, and next thing you know, this feeling's wanting me to get up and walk the aisle.
So it wasn't the lead into another prank.
At this moment, I mean, all of that washed out of me. I was suddenly going, what the heck is happening to me? There's something inside me. I just felt this intense love, but I also felt something pushing me, this prompting.
What is it, Bob?
Well, I was just going to say, for the sake of listeners, that don't know the church world, walking the aisle, were you listening at the period of time with someone talking about Christ and yes. calling you to some kind of a commitment?
It was an altar call.
Yeah. And what's stirring there, you know, is the Holy Spirit that, you know, works in our life. But go ahead, James.
Well, Reverend Gross is up there doing an altar call and
So wait a minute. There's Mr. Stubblefield and Reverend Gross. This sounds like a novel to me. Well, I'm writing these down.
You need to write a book,
my next
James.
Book. No.
Reverend Gross, I think he, you know, his breath definitely matched his name. But I go up there, but Reverend Gross couldn't stand me. He was convinced I was pulling a prank again. Oh. And so he put his claw on my shoulder and clamped down, you know, and said, go over there and sit down. I'll talk to you and this is over.
Oh.
And so I went and sat down. I thought, oh, boy, I'm in trouble now. And so after, you know, everyone was leaving and stuff, Reverend Gross came over to talk to me. And he says, do you know how serious this is? And I said, yes. And he said, why are you doing this? And I said, because I think this is what the Holy Spirit's telling me to do. And he's And he kind of started taking me a little more serious at that point. And eventually I was baptized in that same font that I used to play in.
Was the goldfish still in it?
No, they don't last long with the chlorinated water and stuff. But as I went into high school, science started becoming my passion. And so the professors were always really mocking of anybody of faith. And I just wanted to make good grades. I was a little shy, peer pressure, things like that. And the smart kids was a little rough on the Christians. And then going into college, it got really bad. And I remember a biology teacher, when I was asking him to reconcile DNA with evolution, he made me stand up in the class, and there was like 100 people in this class. And he yelled to the entire class, see that man standing there? You cannot intellectually trust him because he believes the world was made in 7 days. And I had said nothing of the sort. I had simply asked him to help the class understand how DNA reconciles with evolution. And anyway, so the mocking continued. I wasn't as brave as the kid in God's Not Dead.
And that was a great movie, wasn't it?
Great movie, and it really reminded me what a coward I was, because I sure would have loved to have changed some lives by standing up and carrying that cross at that time, but I didn't. And I ran from God at that point. I was already in the way, you know, I was like partying in college and I wanted to date the pretty girls and just make good grades and get on with my life. I didn't want to carry that cross. So life went on and, I was later on in life, I was building lab equipment and things like that. My dad got sick. I'm in my 30s. Late 30s, and he was going to die, and my wife was pregnant with our first baby, and I started remembering those professors that mocked me, and how I had never gotten any answers to my questions, and it kind of boiled up in me like an anger, and a friend of mine who saw that I was dealing with some anger issues, and, you know, of course my dad's dying and stuff like that, and we had a strained relationship, and for the last couple of years, we'd been trying to put this together, and here now he's dying, and he always thought I would turn out bad and stuff. So I wanted him to see my baby, and so it was a race for his death and my baby being born, and it was just really messed me up. And so this friend asked me to go to church with him because he saw I was dealing with anger issues and. I had so many questions, and you know, whenever he would hear me express my anger, it was involved a lot of questions that I couldn't get answered. Anyway, the pastor's up there. I thought the carpet was going to catch on fire when I walked in. You know, it's too late for me, but it was probably a good thing to start doing, you know, for my kids, you know, since we're going to be in the family way.
It's never too late, right, Bob?
I know, you're right.
But I remember sitting in the pews and sitting there kind of arguing with God. You know, of course, if he's not real, why would I be arguing with him? But I was arguing with him saying, so if you're real, why does your church look like this? You know, these guys don't really look like the guys in the Bible. And the pastor's up there hawking these new chronological Bibles that they had just bought and challenging the congregation to read it. And I'm sitting next to doctors and engineers. This church is over on Lookout, so there are a lot of professors from Mines and people like that. So it was kind of fitting for me. Because, you know, I intellectually ran away. And so here I'm sitting with some people, and it seemed all right to them. And they seemed very Bible knowledgeable. And I thought I'd read the Bible when I was a kid. All of a sudden, I'm hearing stuff I had never heard of. And it's like, so I picked up one of those Bibles, bought it, and I started reading it. Made it through Leviticus. Fogged down bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's a law book. Called my mom. Dad had already died, and I hadn't had that baby yet. And I was talking to her, and my dad died on Christmas, so it was pretty rough on the family. So I'm asking her, you know, this book, it's very old and archaic. You know, and the laws in Leviticus, you know, you got a white spot on, you know, you got to go dip yourself in a river and, you know, turn around three times. And so it didn't make sense to me.
And, or anyone else, so don't worry about it.
Well, I was asking her how she applied it to her life and how she managed to stay a Christian all her life. And she said, well, you need help with that. To build your faith and to understand the Bible, you got to ask for his help because this is a difficult book to understand. And I said, well, how do I do that? And she says, well, you got to pray. And I said, well, when I pray, I'm talking to the ceiling. Why would he listen to me anyway? I mean, here's this being who has all this void to work in, and you know, and he makes matter and he spins it into the universe and then he gives it order. And he wants to talk to me? I'm like, who am I? Anyway, she goes, well, you talk to him just like you talk to me, only with respect. So, oh, Ma. So anyway, I did. I prayed for a hungering. And lo and behold, I couldn't put that book down. I read it cover to cover. And then I started over, read it again. And I started it over and read it again. And every time I read it, it came to more life. And suddenly it became a period in my life where it was like crawling in his lap. It was so real. It was almost like, you know, I could visually see what I was reading. And he was moving inside me. Things were happening really fast. And I started having understandings of things that I didn't before. I fell in love with everything Hebrew and Greek and anthropology, and because I wanted to know what a guy 4,000 years ago put on when he got up in the morning. You know, what did he go do after that? You know, what did his family look like? What did the world look like? What was the world politics going on? I became so fascinated. I studied so much. I was putting in like 20 hours a week after work just studying. And then at the church that I had been attending, Their class was their adult ed class was winding down for summer, and I was mad about that. I thought, why would we not have adult ed for summer? Anyway, so I went on an email campaign bugging the pastor, and he said, "Why don't you teach it?"
Oh, beautiful.
So I very nervously accepted, and I did, and I started with John. And it took us 24 months to get through that book and built the class from 5 students to 55.
Sounds like Bob Belts. Took you how long to get through that book?
That was quick.
No. Bob takes his time.
Yeah.
So our guest today is James Frey. You're listening to his testimony about conversion, and the word came alive to him, didn't it, Bob?
Yeah, and I think you probably have a teaching gift, because I think that one of the things that sort of identifies somebody with the teaching gift is that incredible passion to study, and very similar story I have to yours, but anyway.
So how'd that class end up?
Well, it ended up with God messing with me again, because again, I was happy with where he had put me. I was really happy with the academic side of this. I loved teaching, and I could see my future, maybe writing a book or you know, advancing my education degree and moving forward with this, but that wasn't his intentions. And I started, you know, the question I had asked him, why don't we look like those guys in the Bible? He started really messing with me like that. And making lab equipment in my shop, I worked by myself. And so when I would like hear his promptings, it wasn't like it could be anyone else talking to me. It was pretty stark, and I had no place to turn. He really wanted me to do something, but he wouldn't tell me what he wanted me to do, but I felt very uncomfortable. And so I remember one time I was taking this spiritual formation class, and in the spiritual formation class, you're supposed to draw spokes on a wheel of your strengths. And my strengths were heavy in prayer and meditation and study, but I had a flat tire because of social justice. I really wasn't a people person. I didn't really like people. I set my business up so I didn't have to see people. People would send me their orders, their blueprints, and then I would call them up and say, pick it up, bring a check. And so my life was the way I wanted it. And Lord was messing with me. And anyway, so I went and volunteered at a food bank, and I saw all these people coming in, and I got a job in the back stocking shelves so I wouldn't have to talk to anyone. And you know, I was still figuring out.
You were
out
transitioning ways. Toward yeah. becoming a people person.
Oh, at that time, I had my plan. I was going to go do this and then get back to studying.
Ask Bill McCartney, what's your least favorite part of Promise Keepers, which had 1.5 million men at one point, and he would say, too many people.
Well, the one thing I didn't count on was seeing these people, these broken people. They're sick. Mm-hmm. They were sad, and they're coming in for this food. And where in America could this be happening? I just couldn't believe this. You know how this could actually be. Economy was good back then, and anyway, this is going to sound kind of weird. I wanted to see where these people lived. So I stalked them, but not in a creepy way. It was from afar. Don't call the cops. I found so many of them living along the Colfax corridor. And one day I was in 7-Eleven, and they were throwing away these sandwiches. And I asked them, hey, could I have those? And they said, well, no, we'll sell them to you. And so I said, okay, how much? And they said, $1 a pound. So I fill up a whole box of them, and I went to one of the places I saw people going to. And this was really out of my comfort zone. I mean, I had to talk to people. And I knocked on a door, and Mean Street was born.
That's how Mean Street Ministry started.
Yep.
So as you say, in the gutters, in the motel rooms, under the bridges, in the soup kitchens, that's where you find the people you're dealing with at Mean Street.
Yep. Yeah, Mean Street has an interesting name, mean. It has a mathematical meaning, and that is the middle. And I believe walking with the broken is the middle of God's heart. It also means humble origins. It means broken. It means angry. Sickly, low of morals, and so it has a tendency to fit everywhere on it.
How can our listeners help you out?
We need, of course, money. We don't have a fundraising machine, so if people that hear about it, we hope will support us. But this is really great. We have youth that come from all over the United States to go out on the streets with us. We've done these streets so long. We do the east side on Monday nights. We do the west side on Tuesday nights. The people know we're coming. They look to us as their church. If they're living on the streets, and the young people absolutely adore it. CSM said that we are their favorite, voted by the students who are coming from all over. During the winter, of course, when we don't have students, we're just locals. The funny thing is, we have all these young people coming from all over the United States to do Mean Street. We don't have any youth groups from Denver. And here we are, voted number one in ministries, and Denver's not taking advantage of it. But this is a real eye-opener. It'll change your life if you come out on the streets with us. You'll be teamed with experienced people. No one is pushed out there and you know,
left on their own.
Yeah, scared unduly.
You have like a website or something that people could get information from? Or
yes, yeah. meanstreetministry.org.
meanstreetministry.org.
Yeah, we also have a housing program. We also are going to be a family shelter this winter, an emergency family shelter. Our gymnasium, we're going to be converting to doing a family shelter for Jefferson County. Well, actually for all the city, but Jefferson County's actually given us some funds to help with it.
So you've been listening to James Fry. He's the founder of an incredible organization called Mean Street Ministries. So this is Bo again saying to you, look up meanstreetministries.org. If this testimony of how his life changed and now how he's using what he had learned to share with people on the streets that are in tough spots, then I ask you, write a check. Somebody out there today should write a big check, $5,000 or $10,000 if you can. Keep doing what you're doing, but equip James to do a better job than he's even doing right now by giving him more money. If they had more money, they can meet more needs. So, James, you're a great guy and a great guest, and we applaud you for what you're doing and your work.
Thanks, guys. God bless you guys for doing this.
Well, we'll have you back.
Amen. Bob?
We hardly got to the story.
We barely got to Mean Street. Folks, respond if you can. We sure could use your help.
Yep.
See you again next week on You Get the Blessing.
Playing golf with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the course again. On the course again, seeing courses that I've never seen, making shots that I may never make again. I can't wait to get on the course again.